Guess so? Yes? She should have never left him today. She'd been so selfish.
Did you notice any small red spots on his shoulders and chest?
Jack jumped in.
This morning, he came to me feeling miserable and showed them to me. Then he went back to bed, and when I went to check on him, he wouldn't respond. He's fallen into what's called the typhoid state. We'll do what we can to take care of him, but he should have been brought to us sooner. Meanwhile, you should get the vaccine. Don't listen to the idiots who say that it causes tuberculosis. It's perfectly safe.
Of course. How long until we can see our son? Asked Laura.
When he gets better. If he gets better. In the meantime, be sure to tell the teachers at his school that he has it. We don't want an outbreak.
The doctor closed the door behind him with a thud. Laura pressed her face to the glass, searching for Harry. She spotted his profile, with that familiar snub of a nose, in the bed farthest from the door, his eyes closed. His cheeks were red, as if he'd been slapped. How had she not known? Typhoid. The same illness that had killed Amelia's father and brother. She whirled around to Jack. We have to fetch Amelia. She knows typhoid well. She'll be able to help.
Yes, if you think so. Jack frowned. I thought you'd be home a few hours ago, after you'd said your piece at the meeting.
I know, I'm so sorry. I ended up walking home. What an utter waste of time, bemoaning her sorry state when she should have been by her son's side. Through the window, Harry opened his mouth and shut it again. Had he called out for her? None of the nurses responded. This was torture, watching him suffer and not being able to hold his hand or comfort him in any way. She wanted to break through the glass, open the door, and gather him up in her arms. She arranged for her mother to come and take Pearl home, and then Jack and Laura spent the rest of the day like sentries outside the ward, asking questions of anyone, nurse or doctor, who came in or out. One nurse had kindly offered to encourage Harry to look over at them, and to Laura's delight he had, his eyes focusing on her own and a slight smile on his lips. It had felt like a victory, that interaction. He knew they were there. He knew he was being looked after. As the city darkened outside the window at the end of the hallway, Laura heard a familiar step, the even, solid strides of Amelia. She'd received her note. Amelia asked Laura and Jack some questions, speaking in clipped tones, laying her hand once on Laura's arm in comfort. The touch was kind, reassuring, but that was all. She requested that a nurse fetch the doctor, and the nurse blinked with recognition before disappearing down the hall. The doctor appeared, the scorn in his voice replaced with cheery bonhomie.
Dr. Potter, I'm Dr. Bell. We're thrilled to have you visit our ward.
Thank you. I'm concerned about one of your patients, Harry Lyons.
I'm a dear friend of his mother, you see.
She glanced at Laura.
Of course. Would you like to join me in examining the patient?
Amelia checked with Laura, who emphatically approved. She and Jack watched again through the window as the two doctors spoke to Harry, who giggled at something Amelia said. Finally, they reemerged.
Harry's doing quite well, said Amelia. Dr. Bell has assured me he will keep me informed, and you also. We predict a full recovery.
The doctor smiled widely at them before taking his leave. Thank you, Amelia, for coming uptown. Laura swallowed. I know you're busy.
Of course.
I'm happy to help in whatever way I can.
Jack stepped in closer and held out his hand.
Dr. Potter, as my wife said, it was kind of you to put in a good word with Dr. Bell. Our family appreciates it very much.
You're welcome, Mr. Lyons. A silence rose. Seeing Amelia again was strange, like meeting a confidant and a stranger all at once.
Laura knew everything about her. That she liked her tea with two sugars and had a birthmark on her lower back. Yet her face at this moment was a fortress, impenetrable. Once again, Amelia had done Laura an enormous favor, and Laura had nothing to offer in return. She probably couldn't wait to get away fast enough.
You must need to get back. Thank you again.
With that, Amelia turned and left, meeting Laura's eyes only briefly. By Monday, Harry was sitting up in bed and eating again. The kind nurse read a letter to Harry from Laura and Jack, saying they loved him and to focus on getting well. Harry had even managed a small wave.
You might as well go about your business, said Dr. Bell on Monday morning. You can't do any good sitting around here.
Laura sat back down on the bench, like a passenger waiting for a train that would never arrive. Jack joined her, but soon became twitchy, alternating between standing and sitting, pacing and staring through the window. After a half hour, he turned to Laura.
I might as well go back, since the doctor says we should. I can get some work done on the book.
She didn't reply. Around 4 o'clock, remembering the doctor's warning, Laura stopped by the school. She was promptly shown to the principal's office, where a long, thin man sat behind a desk, drumming his fingers at her.
Mrs. Lyons?
Yes.
Laura explained the situation, that the other students should be sure to be vaccinated, as she, Jack, and Pearl all had been.
Typhoid?
The principal stopped drumming. We'll warn the parents. When exactly did he fall ill?
A couple of weeks ago. I didn't notice at first, thought it was a cold. There was just a cough, you see. That's how it began, and I never suspected it could be so serious.
He waved away her explanation.
It's fine, then. There's no danger.
I'm sorry?
She couldn't figure out what he meant. That because Harry was recovering, the other students couldn't be infected? She wasn't sure how it all worked, but this didn't make much sense.
None of the students could have been infected if he only came down with it 2 weeks ago, said the principal.
Why is that?
He consulted a leather notebook filled with names and X's, an attendance record.
Here it is. Yes, I'm correct.
She buzzed with fury. The man was being cagey, and she wasn't sure why. Harry's illness brought her impatience to a sharp point.
Correct about what?
Harry hasn't been in school for 2 months now.
Harry? Harry Lyons? Of course he has.
I'm afraid not, Mrs. Lyons.
He licked his finger and turned the page.
2 months. We sent home a note with your daughter after the first week, but didn't get a reply. Between that and his illness, which of course is quite unfortunate, he'll have to repeat the same grade next year.
Part of her wanted to laugh. The thought of Harry being held back was much less important today than it might have been a few days earlier, before he'd fallen ill. At least he was alive. But why hadn't he come to school for 2 months? And where had he been? The note that the principal had given Pearl sat beneath a pile of books on Jack's desk. Laura had a feeling that Pearl hadn't wanted to get her brother into trouble and had tucked it away where there was a good chance it would be overlooked. If Laura had been home instead of at school or out reporting, Pearl probably would have handed it right over. Laura blamed herself, not her daughter, for the lapse. Upon questioning, Pearl had insisted that Harry walked into school with her and was always waiting at the end of the school day in the playground, ready to walk her home. As far as she knew, he'd been inside the whole time, like her. The next day, Laura checked in with Harry at the hospital and was thrilled to learn he'd been moved out of quarantine and into a children's ward, where she could sit with him in the mornings. He was still subdued, sleeping most of the time, but the fever had subsided and his prognosis was good. She wanted to pepper him with questions but held back. She certainly didn't want to upset him while he was still fragile. That afternoon, she showed up early to the children's school for dismissal. As she waited for Pearl to appear, she scanned the crowd until she found a boy who looked familiar. Sam was his name, she recalled. He'd come home with Harry once or twice early in the school year. Jack had caught them playing baseball in the Stewart room, using books as bases, and let them off lightly, much to Laura's relief. It wasn't easy growing up in a revered institution like the library. Sam? The boy turned.
I'm Harry's mother. You visited us at the library.
She moved closer and bent down, so they were face to face.
I understand Harry hasn't been in school recently. Do you happen to know where he's been going?
Sam shrugged.
It's fine for you to tell me. You see, he's gotten very sick, which might have gotten the people around him very sick. You'd be a hero if you let me know anything at all.
At the word hero, the boy came to life, standing a little taller and looking her in the eye.
He started to go downtown to 4th Avenue with some boys. Where, exactly?
Around Union Square.
Would I know any of the boys? How might I recognize them?
One used to go to school here. Red Patty.
That's his name?
He has ginger hair, you see.
You are incredibly helpful, Sam. You say he used to go to school here?
I haven't seen him in a while. He doesn't come to school anymore.
Is he your age?
No, older. Around 15.
What was Harry doing being friends with an older boy like that? One who dropped out of school? She should have known all this. If she'd been home, she might have noticed. Surely she would have. She thanked Sam and, after escorting Pearl home and getting her started on her homework, put her coat back on.
Are you leaving again?
Pearl watched her from the doorway to the kitchen. Laura kissed her on the forehead.
I'm sorry, love. I have to find out where Harry's been all this time. I'll be back for dinner.
Union Square was bustling with cars and pedestrians, but no red-headed boys, as far as Laura could tell. She walked down 4th Avenue a few blocks, peering into alleyways. No luck. Back in the square, she wandered the perimeter, imagining her son here doing what? Nothing that the principal or Sam had told her made any sense. Harry wasn't the sort of boy to cut school and lie to her and Jack. He was sensitive, empathetic, listening closely when she and Jack had an argument, his eyes darting back and forth between his parents. These days, with the tension between her and Jack so high, he had probably needed more reassurance than she'd given. Somehow, she'd always believed that if she just loved everyone enough, all would be well. That love would be the snowfall that blanketed the crevasses and jagged edges of their world, smoothing them out into a gentle field of white. Maybe she was wrong. A flash of color caught her eye. A group of boys were gathered under the statue of George Washington on a horse, and the tallest one had a crop of ginger-colored hair under his cap. She waited until she was only a few yards away to call out, and didn't shout. She didn't want to scare them off and watch them scatter. Red Patty? The boy sauntered right up to her, with an insouciance she would otherwise never have tolerated in a child that age.
Who wants to know?
I'm the mother of Harry Lyons.
The boy's eyes didn't flicker.
So?
He's sick. With typhoid. I wanted to warn you to be careful, in case he passed it on to you.
Red Patty surveyed his audience with a crooked grin.
What do you think, boys? Are we sick? Anyone about to faint? Let me know and I'll catch you.
The last sentence was directed at Laura with a leer.
You must be serious about this. It's a terrible disease,
Harry has been very ill.
Don't know anyone named that.
You aren't in any trouble, I promise. I just want to know what he's been doing these past couple of months. We know he didn't go to school. Did you meet at school? Is that what happened? And then decided to cut class? She babbled on, desperate to connect. I don't blame you, of course, but I need to know.
I told you, woman. I don't know a Harry.
The other boys snickered. She tried one more time. Please, I'll pay you some money, if that's what you want. My husband and I, we just want to know why.
We don't want your money. We don't know you, don't know him.
Red Patty spit on the ground near her feet. If any of you feel ill, please go to a doctor right away.
We don't get sick. Not us toughies. It's the soft uptown boys that get sick.
He was referring to Harry, Laura was certain. So you know my son, right? Is that true? But already the boys had withdrawn, heading south, Red Patty the last to follow. He touched Laura on the arm, and she had to stop herself from yanking it away.
I don't know anyone, but I'd like to know you better. What do you say we get together sometime?
You're very rude. I'm sure your mother and father wouldn't be happy about what you're up to, getting young boys into trouble. He nearly died, I'll have you know.
Red Patty just laughed, giving her arm a squeeze before stepping back, looking her up and down.
You tell him to get well soon from me then, Mum.
She watched them dash across 14th Street, nearly getting run down by a carriage before disappearing into the crowd. Poor Harry. What had happened for him to seek out these boys? Laura should have been home instead of out reporting on violent protests and radical women's clubs for her studies. Her family had almost sunk without her sure hand on the tiller. Her choices had been all wrong. The fact that she'd so enjoyed the past 7 months only made her failure more damning. There was nothing more for her to do here downtown. It was time to go home and put right what had gone wrong. Hopefully, by tomorrow, Harry would be well enough to speak, and she could beg his forgiveness for having neglected him. She would make her family whole again.
Chapter 21. New York City, 1993. Sadie spent what felt like the longest weekend of her life holed up in her apartment. Outside, she heard the cries of the children on the playground across the street, a reminder that she really should return Lonnie's check-in call and have a chat with Valentina. But she didn't feel like it. He'd detect her nervousness and ask why, and she didn't want to have to explain that she'd been banished from the library by Dr. Hooper. Even worse would be pretending to be happy for Valentina's sake. She didn't have it in her. Instead, she reworked the draft of the catalog for the exhibit, making the essay as taut and instructive as possible, cutting down any extraneous prose. All the previous week, the workers had been toiling in the exhibit hall next to the Berg collection, placing the cases where she had instructed them. They were so close to the finish line. It was all she could do not to return to the library, carry on as she had before. But Nick and Dr. Hooper had made it clear that at least for the weekend, she was not to appear, and had confiscated her key. Which was ridiculous, as now Dr. Hooper was the only one with a key, and unless he planned on running the library and mounting the exhibit as well, there was no one left to make Evergreen happen. Monday, at 9 o'clock sharp, she had an appointment at Dr. Hooper's office. She hated not being able to explain what she'd seen before then. Now that she'd had a chance to collect herself, she felt it more important than ever to be able to describe to Dr. Hooper and Nick what she'd heard. Or more specifically, not heard. That there was no slamming of the door to the cage. Whoever was in there hadn't used the door to get in and out. As soon as she explained that to Dr. Hooper, she'd hightail it to the art and architecture room to take a close look at the original floor plan of the library. There had to be something that they were missing. a way for the thief to get access so easily and then escape into thin air. That scraping noise she'd heard before the thief fled. If she could get back into the stacks, she might be able to figure out what had caused it. There was so much to do. She tried calling Nick at home, but his answering machine picked up, his voice growling for the caller to leave a message. She'd hung up without doing so. Whatever it was that had been blossoming between them was in terrible jeopardy. Right when she'd been ready to take a chance, everything had fallen apart. By the time her Monday morning meeting rolled around, Sadie's nerves were at a breaking point. Nick stood, refusing to take the chair next to her as Dr. Hooper loomed behind his walnut desk, like a Supreme Court justice. Which in her case, he was, really. "Please, Sadie, we'd like to hear what happened on Saturday night." Dr. Hooper placed his elbows on the desk and put his hands together, index fingers pointed out like the silly game she used to play as a child. Here's the church, here's the steeple. The nursery rhyme buzzed through her head. "Sadie?" She gave her head a shake.
"Sorry. You see, I was in the stacks when I heard something. Although I wasn't able to see the thief, I think we can figure out how he got down there. I have an appointment with the Art and Architecture Division right after this."
"Sadie, stop." She did so, surprised by Dr. Hooper's harsh interruption. "Let me explain the way I see this. You are the only employee other than me with access to the Berg collection in the stacks. On a Saturday evening after the library had closed, we came upon you with one of the rare books hidden on your person."
She had to clear things up fast. "It wasn't hidden. The thief had dropped it and I wanted to keep it safe as I ran up the stairs after him."
"Did you see the thief?"
"I told you, no. But I could hear him running away from me."
"Yet we were right there and we didn't see or hear anyone. You can see why we're worried. About you and about the collection."
"I'm fine." She pulled out the essay from her tote bag, desperate to discuss logistics, get things back on track. "Here's the essay for the catalog, all ready to go. The exhibit cases are almost ready. In the meantime, I need to see the library's original floor plan. The answer's there, I'm certain."
Dr. Hooper took the essay and placed it on the corner of his desk without looking at it. "Mr. Adriano has informed me of something else."
She looked over at Nick, who refused to meet her eye.
"He said that you're related to Laura Lyons. I find it curious that you never mentioned the family connection when we spoke of her. I don't like secrets. And it makes me wonder what else you've been keeping from me." He paused. "I'm afraid we have to ask you to take a leave of absence. Until we determine our next steps."
She hadn't even gotten to tell her own story. "Leave of absence?" Sadie shook her head. "But I can help, don't you see?"
"For now, no. We will not need your assistance. Nick will escort you to your office so you can take any personal effects with you."
"But the floor plan? The exhibit?"
"Sorry, Sadie. It hurts me to do this, but we must."
She didn't speak to Nick until they were walking down the hallway toward the Berg collection. "I know the way it looks, but we're so close to figuring this out. There's something we're missing."
"You'll have to stay out of the building until the Board of Trustees can be informed, and I can do more investigating."
She stopped and made him face her. "You think it might be me, don't you?"
He didn't answer right away, but the way he avoided her eyes said it all. "You've been under a lot of pressure lately. Your mother's death, this exhibit. Maybe you need some time to rest."
"Exactly what I don't need is rest. What I need is to figure out what's going on." Her heart thudded in her chest. She reached out and touched the sleeve of his shirt.
"Sadie, no."
He pulled away, and she let her hand hang there in midair. He didn't trust her anymore. She'd lost him. But it was worse than that. "I know what you're thinking, Nick. And you're wrong."
"What's that?"
"That maybe I manufactured this thing between us, our friendship, whatever it is, so I could get away with stealing books. Is that what you believe?"
I don't know. I've gotten confused. Too close. And that's not good. I have to keep a clear head.
She'd brought the whole world crashing down around her. Sadie wiped her tears away before they entered the Burg, where Claude looked up victorious from his desk. A couple of scholars were there which made any further discussion impossible, and for which she was grateful. She collected her things and let Nick escort her downstairs. She was on her own.
So are you fired, or is it a leave of absence?
Lonnie poured out two glasses of wine and set one in front of Sadie. Valentina and Robin were doing homework together in the other room. Luann was off on another business trip, and Sadie wished she could escape her brother's questions and just sit there, listening to the sing-song cadences of Valentina reading out loud.
I really don't know, said Sadie.
I'm not allowed back until they've done their investigation. The exhibit was due to open in 3 weeks, and Claude was now in charge. All of her hard work, and she had nothing to show for it. She was an outcast, a pariah.
We should get a lawyer for you, someone who can defend you.
From what? There aren't any charges against me.
A lawyer might help you clear your name.
The only way that's going to happen is if the thief shows up and confesses, which isn't likely. Lonnie swirled the wine in his glass, his eyes on Sadie. Usually talking things through with Lonnie made her feel better, but this wasn't solvable.
I thought the missing books had been found, he said.
They had, but someone got into the cage and stole another one, and I chased him. But then Dr. Hooper and the security consultant showed up, and there I was, holding the book he'd dropped, with no thief in sight.
So they think it might be you?
Yes, they figure it was me. Plus, only the director and I had keys.
Do you think the director did it?
She considered it and shook her head.
No, I don't think so.
There's something we're missing, or else this thief is some kind of a ghost. It certainly seemed as if a ghost was slipping in and out of the cage. The angry ghost of her grandfather coming back to seek vengeance on whatever it was that went wrong way back then.
Maybe one of our ancestors?
He was teasing her, but gently. I'll be honest, I do think there might be a connection. If only I could figure out what. She wished she'd dug further when her mother was alive. Hadn't allowed her to skirt her questions about life in the library way back when, though she could see why Pearl might have wanted to avoid talking about those years. Until recently, Sadie hadn't really considered what it must have been like for Pearl, as a young girl to lose both her brother and her father. Then later her husband. But now it was too late. Lonnie set down his glass.
Are you okay?
He'd slipped into doctor mode, his delivery steady and reassuring.
No, I'm not.
Her voice came out raspy.
I can't seem to do anything right.
Now, Sadie.
Mom was so resilient, and I don't think I ever appreciated it. She suffered so much loss and still carried on, baking her fancy cakes, living her life.
Maybe it's time for you to bake some cakes yourself.
Are you serious?
She burst out laughing.
That's quite the euphemism.
What on earth are you talking about?
He gave a sheepish grin.
Explore your options. You've been through a lot, and maybe it's time to take a break.
There's nothing to take a break from.
Your job? Mom's death, which I'm sure reminds you of Dad's.
You lost Dad as well, and you haven't taken a break.
I was 18 and off to college when Dad died.
You were just 8, and you were there.
He swallowed.
You found him.
Valentina burst into the room, holding something pearly in her hand.
Look! I lost a tooth!
Robin followed behind her.
First one. She'll be all grown up before you know it.
Sadie glanced over at Lonnie, whose face was brimming with fatherly pride, as if Valentina had just won a gold medal at the Olympics.
Let's see it, my love.
Lonnie held out his hand and cupped the tooth gently, as Valentina smiled up at him with a gap-toothed grin. After her divorce, Sadie had thrown herself into her work at the library, embraced her new life as best she could. She'd distracted herself with facts, convinced that knowledge and logic could solve all the world's problems, and cut a part of herself off in the process. Now she had a choice. She could continue doing so, waiting patiently for Nick and Dr. Hooper's determination of her guilt or innocence, knowing that she'd done nothing wrong. Or she could take action. The thrill she got from investigating the book thefts and her family's history made her want to keep on moving forward, following the clues despite her banishment from the library, and no matter what she discovered. She'd never known her grandmother, who seemed to be the linchpin of both her work life and her family. The one woman who had all the answers had died during World War II, killed during the German Blitz on London. It was too late. Or was it? She turned to Lonnie. Maybe you're right, about taking a break. Maybe I should go to London. England, the home of Virginia Woolf, of Charlotte Bronte, of so many of the Berg's authors, including Laura Lyons.
You mean where the bridge is?
Valentina launched into an off-key version of the children's song.
Yes.
Lonnie studied her.
Why London?
Well, there's nothing going on here for me for the time being, and I've never been before. On top of that, it was part of our mother's life, even if she didn't talk about it much. Now that I've been outed as Laura Lyons' granddaughter at work, why not go there and see what I can discover? She didn't say out loud the thought that maybe she could take advantage of the connection and secure something for the Evergreen exhibit. Get back into Dr. Hooper's good graces. It was a long shot, to be sure. I figure, why not? Chapter 22. London, 1993. Why anyone traveled more than two time zones away was beyond Sadie's comprehension. She'd woken up drooling and groggy as the flight attendants passed around breakfast trays with a deafening clatter. The slow trudge off the plane was followed by a long wait in line at customs. The travel agent had found her a cheap fare that departed 3 days after she'd first brought up the idea with Lonnie, along with a reasonable rate at a bed and breakfast. Once there, she lay down for what was meant to be a 20-minute nap and woke up 6 hours later, starving and confused. A restless night in her room, attempting to sleep, followed, before the lady who owned the B&B knocked on her door the next morning carrying a tea tray, chatting away in a sing-song voice about rising and shining, when all Sadie wanted to do was go back to bed. She'd wasted most of her first day asleep, and there were only four left, so Sadie pulled herself out of bed and took a long bath, washing her hair using the unwieldy spray nozzle and trying not to wet the lime-green floral wallpaper as she did so. Not an easy task. The tube wasn't at all like the subway in New York, where tokens were swallowed up by the turnstiles and off you went. Here you had to prove you hadn't traveled any farther than the zone you'd paid for, or so explained the irritable tube agent as Sadie bumbled her way through the turnstile, having misplaced her ticket. It was embarrassing getting so much wrong, when she usually prided herself on getting things right. She tried her best, eating sandwiches consisting of only a bit of cheese and a drippy tomato, drinking tea, figuring out which coins to leave for a tip. If she were with Nick, they might have had a good laugh at the myriad of differences between the two cultures. She missed him. She missed the library, the smell of old books and her squeaky desk chair. The days when everything was in order and she knew what to expect. She was discombobulated. What a perfectly onomatopoeic word to describe her current state, all jumpy, confused, and tired. The city of London was discombobulated as well, the IRA having blown up a bomb-filled truck in the city's financial district 2 weeks ago, killing one and injuring more than 40. It hadn't deterred Sadie from coming, though, just as the bombing in the parking garage of the World Trade Center hadn't changed the way she went about her day in New York. although she had to admit she quickened her step as she passed by trucks. They were called lorries here, idling by the side of the road. But Sadie's shoulders began to drop, and her mood lifted as she followed the map along the hilly streets of Highgate to the address that was on all of the correspondence from Laura Lyons's estate. The air felt lighter here than the air in New York City. Softer. She ended up in front of a red brick townhouse with a manic rose garden out front, a crazy riot of white blossoms and thorny vines that looked vaguely sinister, like flowery barbed wire. She realized with a start that it was the exact location where Laura Lyons was standing in the photograph in Lonnie's dining room. Sadie knocked on the door. After a short wait, an older woman with high cheekbones and huge blue eyes opened the door. "Hello, I'm looking for Miss Hillary Quinn," said Sadie. The woman didn't answer right away, just stared.
"That's me. Who are you?"
She spoke with a throaty croak.
"I'm Sadie Donovan, Laura Lyons's granddaughter. I've been calling, trying to reach you from New York. I thought I'd stop by during my trip abroad and introduce myself."
Miss Quinn squinted at her suspiciously. Then her eyes softened.
"You look so much like her. Forgive me, I've been a little under the weather, and seeing you is something of a shock. Come in."
The apartment took up the first two floors of the building, the lower one opening up to a large kitchen with a long wooden table in the center, and a living room behind it that looked out onto another jungle-like garden. This was where Laura Lyons had written her essays. This was where she'd come up with her radical ideas and put them into words that had inspired generations. And this was where Sadie's mom, Pearl, had spent several years before returning to New York for college. Once again, Sadie felt a pang of guilt for not asking more questions. Then again, what child cares about their parents' life before they were born? It's not until it's too late that the resonance of the earlier times and how they echo through the next generation are deemed valuable.
"Would you like some tea?"
Miss Quinn moved stiffly toward the stove.
"Can I help? Please don't if it's a bother."
"No bother at all."
Sadie settled into one of the wooden chairs at the table.
"When did you first come to work for my grandmother?"
"Back in 1935, eons ago."
"Did you know my mother, Pearl?"
Even as she asked, she realized the math didn't add up for their paths to cross.
"No. Laura sometimes talked about her daughter in the States, but never went to see her. And the girl never came here."
"Did she ever say why?
Was there a falling out?" Miss Quinn shrugged.
"I'm not sure."
Sadie waited, but the woman didn't seem inclined to elaborate.
Maybe Sadie was being too direct, too American.
She tried a softer approach. "It's been wonderful the way Laura Lyons is finally being appreciated for her work."
"These days I get legions of Lyons fans wanting to know more about her. About her life,"
sniffed Miss Quinn.
"Knocking on my door first thing in the morning, asking for a tour."
That explained her reticence. "I'm a fan, but I hope you realized it's more than that. Although, I do have questions." Miss Quinn poured the tea into teacups and sat across from Sadie.
"Hoping for something for your exhibit? Is that why you've really come?"
So she'd listened to Sadie's telephone messages. But Miss Quinn's words were in no way an invitation. They were a warning.
"It's my field, so of course I'm interested in anything that might have been left behind."
There was no point in mentioning that an early draft of a Laura Lyons essay might be the only thing to save what was left of Sadie's reputation.
"But honestly, as her granddaughter, I'd love to know more about what she was like."
"It was a long time ago."
"I assure you, I don't want to be a bother. My mom was close-lipped about her mother, and Laura Lyons was such an iconic figure. You can understand, can't you?"
Miss Quinn seemed to gather her thoughts.
"She was quiet, not a chatty sort. Careful, but generous."
That was a start.
"I'm sorry I never knew her."
You look just like her. Almost gave me a heart attack at first. That hair. But it's more than that. It's your eyes, too.
And we both love literature, of course. I quite like the idea of taking after her. We both were married and then embraced an independent life. She pushed aside thoughts of Nick. Forging ahead alone. Miss Quinn's lips pursed like she was going to say something but thought better of it. The look in her eyes brought Sadie up short. Did Laura fall in love again later?
No. What a silly question.
Displeasure dripped from Miss Quinn's words. The woman was hiding something. No bows or mad affairs? Sadie couldn't help but dig further.
Of course not.
Huh. I mean, I would think it would be natural for a talented, successful woman like her to find someone later in life. Sadie waited, but Miss Quinn didn't elaborate. Can I ask, why didn't she want to leave any of her papers behind?
Why should she?
Now she really had Miss Quinn's backup. The interview was going downhill fast. As a curator, what writers leave behind in the way of early drafts, diaries, or notes interests me greatly. I'm curious as to why Laura Lyons refused to leave anything for posterity.
She said she wanted the work to stand on its own, and not have it watered down by rough drafts or snippets scrawled on envelopes. The work, she said, had been distilled to its essence, so nothing further was necessary.
So her directive was to destroy everything after her death? Miss Quinn pointed to the hearth in the living room.
I did it right there the day after.
Sadie stared into the hearth, horrified. Her entire professional life she'd collected, preserved, and revered notes and letters. To think of all those clues to a life gone, up the chimney, turned into ash. What a terrible loss. Sadie wanted to shake this woman and make her understand that it was nothing to be proud of what she'd done.
You're judging me. I can see that, Miss Quinn said.
No, of course not. But the words rang false even to Sadie's ears. In her eagerness, she'd pushed too far.
I think you better leave.
I'm sorry, I really am. Please, I've come all this way. My mother recently passed away, and I've been under pressure at work. She trailed off, uncertain of what more to say. Could we start again, please? But the woman remained unmoved by Sadie's pleas. The interview was over. Sadie returned the next morning, and the next. She knew Miss Quinn was there, lurking just behind the front door, and figured she'd show her that she wasn't about to give up. At night, she sought out the London music venues she'd only read about. The Blue Note for some acid jazz, the sonorous voice of Leonard Cohen echoing through the Royal Albert Hall, and the pounding beats and pulsing lights of the Four Aces. But the energy that normally coursed through her body as she ventured out into the night wasn't there anymore. She felt tired, yes, but also spent. Like the beat of a bass drum would no longer serve its purpose as a way of losing herself, hiding from herself. On her final day, she stopped by Miss Quinn's place again. The front curtain fluttered as she stepped around the rose brambles that encroached upon the front walk. But again, there was no response to the bell. This was madness, really. What had her grandmother been thinking to put such a selfish ninny in charge of her estate? Then again, she probably hadn't counted on dying so young. She rapped hard on the door, waited a beat, then knocked again. Miss Quinn, it's Sadie again. Sadie Donovan. I would love to talk to you. Outside the gate, a woman pushing one of those old-fashioned prams walked past, pursing her lips at Sadie's racket. Sadie gave her a fake smile and kept on. Miss Quinn, are you in there? I'm fairly certain you're in there. Still nothing. She'd be heading back to New York with nothing to show other than a t-shirt with the Union Jack on it for Valentina. She put her back against the door and slid down to the stoop, watching the fog roll by like a parade of ghosts. It felt good to just sit and be, and not have to think. Here's the deal, Miss Quinn. She spoke out to the air, to the garden, to no one in particular. I'm going to be honest with you. I do want something out of you, it's true. I'd love to get my hands on something, anything of Laura Lyons's that I can show my boss and we can put up in the exhibit. You see, my job is on the line for a number of reasons. None of them to do with my qualifications, I assure you. I'm the best librarian in the institution by far. But my people skills, you might say, could use some polishing. Really, we have a lot more in common than you'd think. My grandmother? Our ability to successfully tune other people out and go about our business. Hats off to you, I say. She heard a bump on the other side of the door. Miss Quinn was there listening to every word. She straightened up. There's been a series of thefts of books at the library, and I have to find out who did it and fix that situation. It turns out that there were thefts during Laura's time there as well. And I want to know if there's a connection. Any connection, or if she said anything about them to you. The door opened unexpectedly and Sadie almost fell into the foyer. She twisted around and looked up at Miss Quinn, who from this angle seemed fierce, staring down at her with those frosty blue eyes.
Come in.
More tea, more sitting at the kitchen table. But this time Miss Quinn took some biscuits with jam centers from a tin and put them on a plate.
Where are you staying?
In Bloomsbury. Sadie nibbled on a biscuit.
Delicious. My mother used to make these. Laura used to brag about her daughter's skill in the kitchen.
Progress. My mother was an excellent baker. She passed away in late March.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I'd read in the biographies that my grandmother died during a German raid on London. A bombing during World War II, but not much more. Did it happen nearby? For a moment, it seemed as if Miss Quinn was going to shut down again. But then she gave a slight shake of her head, as if rousing herself.
She'd gone into town to visit her friend Amelia.
Something about the way Miss Quinn said the name gave Sadie pause. There was a softness to it. She'd been fond of her. Amelia?
Yes. Dr. Amelia Potter, the public health advocate. She was quite famous in her time.
What did she do?
She made sure the poor received decent medical care, saved thousands of lives, improved thousands of others.
And she and Laura were close?
Very close.
It all clicked. Amelia and Laura had been more than friends, Sadie was certain of it. It explained Miss Quinn's defensiveness to Sadie's earlier questions about Laura's love life. She took a deep breath. Can I ask, were they lovers? Miss Quinn looked down at her hands. If they were, I think it's a fine thing, commented Sadie.
It's not to be discussed.
Maybe back then, but times have changed. Or at least they're changing. If they were close, I think it's wonderful. Miss Quinn regarded her with a raised eyebrow, as if she were assessing Sadie's worthiness. When she finally spoke, the words tumbled out, her relief at disclosing a long-held secret palpable.
It was wonderful. They were a beautiful pair. They first met in New York, and although they kept separate residences, they rarely spent a night apart.
All this time, Sadie had imagined she was modeling her life after Laura's, keeping her focus on her work, when in fact Laura had been in a relationship for decades, one that easily could have imperiled her reputation and livelihood if the truth were discovered. Yet Laura had pursued who she loved regardless, while Sadie had refused even the possibility of love after her divorce. Sadie leaned forward. It means so much that you protected them. I can understand why you would, as you wanted her legacy to be about her work. Were they together? At the end?
I'd told her not to go to Amelia's, that it wasn't safe, but she insisted. She always had a strong will.
Miss Quinn stared out the window into the front yard.
She stayed late as she sometimes used to.
A German bomb dropped, and the building toppled over onto both of them.
How awful. For you as well.
Miss Quinn looked over at Sadie. Thank you for saying that. Sadie saw the situation from the older woman's point of view. She'd done as she'd been instructed, protecting her employer's legacy, and then, once Laura Lyons became a household name, been scorned for it.
Thank you for taking care of her estate.
My brother and I appreciate it.
I wish she'd been alive to see how far she's come.
To see how far ahead of her time she was, you mean?
That's right.
Miss Quinn gave Sadie a slight nod.
I'll tell you something I haven't told anyone else, since you've been asking about her writings. And I'm only telling you this because you're her granddaughter. A few months before she died, when the entire city was on edge and no one knew what the future held, she told me that she'd written one essay to be saved for after her death, and that she'd give it to me one day, but not yet. She said it told the truth, and that for now she always carried it with her.
The truth, repeated Sadie. It wasn't on her when she was found?
Miss Quinn waved a hand.
I went through all her belongings, combed all the pockets of all her coats, her dresses. There was nothing tucked away in a secret lining.
Did she ever mention her husband, my grandfather?
She never spoke of him, and rarely spoke of her children, but it wasn't from lack of emotion. I got the impression that it was too much emotion that stopped her. She was focused on whatever she was working on. Laura was at times joyful, always quick-witted, but she didn't talk about her life in America.
So she never talked about a robbery at the library in New York?
No.
But Miss Quinn's answer was careful, measured.
What was stolen?
A number of rare books. Probably the most important work was Poe's Tamerlane. It was really valuable and one of the first things that went missing, back when Laura and the family lived there.
Poe. Her favorite.
She told you that?
Sadie put down the cookie she'd just picked up.
One time I remember we were at a Christmas party given by the family down the street. A husband, wife, two children, a boy and a girl. Laura had gotten quite drunk, which was not like her, and was staring up at this bookcase that covered one entire wall. In her hand was a volume of Poe's collected poetry, and she turned to me and said she loved Poe best.
Miss Quinn paused as if deciding whether to continue.
She grew very mysterious, sort of playful, and she said she knew one that was hidden away, in a place where no one would find it.
One, meaning a book by Poe?
She laughed. She told me that the book was exactly where it should be, yet exactly where it should not. I asked her what she meant by that, but she got teary and changed the subject. I remember this well because I'd never seen her cry before. She was a controlled woman.
Where it should be, yet where it should not.
In a library was the answer to the first part. What if the answer to the second was somewhere inside the old apartment where they had lived? What if Laura Lyons knew her husband had stashed the stolen book somewhere close by, somewhere safe? That would be the most obvious and easiest hiding place, maybe under an old floorboard or in some old cupboard. With all the boxes and detritus piled up since the rooms had been turned into storage, it was possible that anything hidden had remained undisturbed in the intervening years. Miss Quinn finished her tea.
I'm sorry I can't be more help to you.
No, it's nice to hear about her.
I hope you're able to secure your job.
Me too.
They parted with Sadie promising to keep in touch. Back at the bed and breakfast, she remembered with a start that it was Lonnie's birthday and gave him a call to wish him well, filling him in on what she'd learned.
I'm eager to get back into the old apartment and see what I can find, she said.
You're dealing with recollections from many years ago, but I hope it leads to something. I take it you're ready to come home? He asked.
I am. It was good to get away. I'm glad I went. I feel like I can handle whatever's coming down the pike now.
I've got your back.
Thank you. And happy birthday, big brother.
After a long flight home, Sadie threw down her luggage and fell into bed, dreaming of sirens blaring, of bombs going off, and of fire. She woke to the sound of her phone ringing and answered with a groggy, "Hello?"
"Sadie, it's Luann."
She checked the clock. 7 in the morning.
"Luann, what is it?"
"Is Valentina with you?"
Sadie shot upright. "No, why?" She waited for Luann to say more, but the only sound was a strange inhalation, like she was unable to catch her breath, like she was underwater.
"What is it? What's happened?"
Sadie demanded.
"She's missing."
A pause. Another choked cry.
"Valentina's gone."
Chapter 23. New York City, 1914. "Tell me where you went to when you weren't in school." Harry was nestled beside Laura in his bed at home, where he'd been slowly recuperating the past few weeks, getting a little stronger every day. Laura gave a silent thanks. Harry was alive, they were well, and eventually everything would get back to normal, now that her energies were no longer diffused. Harry avoided her gaze.
"I know you went downtown with someone named Red Patty from school."
Now she had his attention. In a strange way, the investigative skills she'd learned in journalism school were paying off, she supposed. She could follow a trail and wasn't afraid to ask questions, which had led her to Red Patty and his cohorts. She hadn't told Jack what she'd learned, partly because she wanted to speak with Harry alone first, but also because no doubt he'd blame her for not being around enough to know their boy had been skipping school week after week.
"Tell me why, Harry."
He shrugged.
"I hate school. I was going to fail, so what was the point?"
"Why would you fail?"
"I don't know. I can't get anything right. The teachers would hit my hands with a ruler when I didn't know the answers."
He clutched a stuffed animal that she'd bought for him after he'd returned home, a fluffy lamb with a small bell around its neck.
"Why didn't you tell me or your father? We could have helped you. You weren't here."
That was true. Jack had been busy either working or with his manuscript, and she'd been immersed in school and the club, and Amelia.
"I'm sorry, my love, but we'll figure this out together now, all right? You know that I also failed out of school this year, don't you?"
He gave a solemn nod.
"Because you couldn't understand?" "Well, more because they couldn't understand. But you see, I'm fine, and we'll figure out my next steps, just as we'll figure out yours, too. We're in this together, all right?"
He squeezed the lamb tighter, and the bell gave off a faint ring.
"Will you read to me?" he asked.
She picked up Maritime Heroes, but handed it over to him instead.
"I think you should read to me."
He sighed and turned to the bookmarked page. Holding the book only a few inches away from his face, he began reading, stumbling over word after word. After a paragraph, he threw the book down on the bedclothes in frustration.
"I can't, I tell you. Please, will you read to me?"
The plaintive cry broke her heart. "Harry, can you not see unless you hold the book so close?" She picked it back up and placed it open on his lap.
"What does it look like when it's here?"
He pointed to his lamb.
"Like him, fuzzy."
"The letters look fuzzy?"
"And the words, all of it."
She almost laughed out of sheer relief, but caught herself. You need glasses, Harry. That's all this is, I'm sure of it. Once you're well, we'll get you a pair of spectacles, and you'll be able to see, able to read, just like the other students.
You mean this isn't what you see?
No, it's clearer to me. Not fuzzy at all. No wonder you've been frustrated. You're not seeing the same thing the rest of us are. She held him close.
I'm sorry you've been through a terrible time of it. I promise I'll be here from now on.
How's my boy doing?
Jack stood in the doorway beaming and didn't wait for an answer.
I'm almost finished with the editing. I'll work all night tonight, and then the manuscript will be ready to go back to the agent. From there, it's out into the world.
His self-centeredness irritated her, but she supposed he had every right to be proud. She rose and let him envelop her in a bear hug, trying not to note how different it was to be hugged by Jack than Amelia. Thick limbs and whiskers versus soft skin and a quiet lightness. All that was over with. Her family came first, from now on. Dr. Anderson had been surprisingly compassionate when she'd told him she'd not finished school, and even asked if she would contribute to the next staff newsletter. She turned him down. If Jack needed a typist, she'd do it. If Harry needed spectacles, she'd take care of it. No one could manage these three people better than she could. Her own mother had been a dear to help out, but no one could take Laura's place, and no one else should have to. Her failure at Columbia only proved that there was no point trying to get ahead in a career unless a woman was unshackled, like Amelia, like so many of the other members of the Heterodoxy Club. Otherwise, the obstacles were insurmountable. She'd been reckless to imagine she could manage so much at once, and her failure to her family only proved that. If she'd been home, she might have noticed Harry's problems with reading and taken care of it before he got punished and ran off with Red Patty and frustration. This was her job now, the children and Jack. She tried not to think about Amelia, tried to forget their silly jokes and the way Amelia looked at Laura as she spoke, as if every word were a gumdrop to savor. Laura's life had settled back to the way it was supposed to be. But she still missed Amelia terribly, missed the frisson that passed between them when they grew close, the physical joy of having the person she loved most sitting right next to her, the emotional connection with someone who knew exactly who she was and loved her for all the right reasons, the person who wanted her to stretch, to reach, to challenge herself. But it was too much to ask for. She pulled out of Jack's embrace. I must be getting dinner on the table. We have so much to celebrate, don't we? She turned to her husband. I have a strong hunch that our boy here needs glasses, which will make it easier for him in school.
Glasses? Jack chucked him under the chin. You'll catch all the girls if you start wearing glasses, you know. It'll make you look quite grown up and serious.
Really? Harry blushed.
Trust me, my boy. I know these things.
Jack was a good father, a good provider. Now that his book was nearly finished, they could move on to the next phase of their lives. Maybe move out of the library, somewhere farther uptown, nearer to her parents. Not downtown. That dream had died. For a moment, she wondered who she'd be once the children had moved into homes of their own, with families of their own. The empty days stretching long as Jack wrote another book or toured the country giving readings. Would she regret her choice then? No. No more aspirations for her. Let Jack be the dreamer. Once Harry had fully recovered, she took him to the eye doctor, his first trip out since coming home from the hospital. The doctor told him he looked quite scholarly with his new glasses, and Harry stood a little taller on the way home. Laura gave a quiet prayer of thanks for the healthy color of his cheeks, which had finally replaced the flush of illness. On the way home, he read out loud all the signs and posters they passed, eager to show off his revived skills. She couldn't have been prouder. Pearl was curled up in a miserable ball in the armchair in the parlor when they arrived home. No doubt Harry's illness had taken its own toll on her. Pearl, what's wrong? Father is upset. He threw a book at the wall. Had the agent rescinded his offer? Did that kind of thing happen in the publishing world? Poor Jack. Laura looked around, searching for a blizzard of loose paper, finding none. What happened, exactly?
We were walking into the library, and there was a lady standing at the information desk that he knew. She was bringing a book for you, and Father offered to deliver it.
What lady? What did she look like?
She wore a tie, like a man.
Amelia. Pearl bit her lip.
The lady didn't seem to want to give him the book at first, but Father insisted.
Where is it? She pointed to the corner behind the other chair.
He unwrapped it and looked at it, and then threw it over there and left.
She told Harry and Pearl to go to their rooms, and only after they'd left did she reach down behind the chair and pick up the book, its pages bent and the binding broken. The Awakening, by Kate Chopin. Amelia was sending some kind of a message. That she missed her, perhaps. A heat spread across Laura's body. She leafed through it and noticed an inscription in pen on the title page. 27. A. She turned to page 27, and the warmth disappeared. Her eye went to the second paragraph of the page, where the heroine admits to being charmed by the sensuous beauty and candor of another woman. Who can tell what metals the gods use in forging the subtle bond which we call sympathy, which we might as well call love? Jack had seen Amelia and intercepted her delivery. He'd read the inscription and known that it was a love note, bound in leather. At the bottom of the page, one more word was written, in ink. London? Laura said hello with a tight smile to the workers she encountered as she made her way to the basement. She was relieved to find Jack in his office, where they could talk in private, away from the children. She had a chance here to explain.
I saw your gift from that doctor.
He didn't bother to wait until she'd closed the door behind her to speak.
I read the inscription.
She groped for what would be the right words, but all were inadequate. She felt wholly incapable of explaining her feelings for Amelia and what had happened between them in a way Jack would understand.
Is that where you've been spending all your time? With that woman, doing what? Were you not happy with me?
It wasn't about not being happy with you. I'm very happy with you.
But she was happier with Amelia. He grimaced.
I've heard of such things, of course. But my wife? What does London mean? Does she want you to run away with her to London?
I never considered it. I wouldn't do that, and told her so.
Don't think for a moment that I'd let you leave with my children. I will never allow that.
While she understood his shock, she couldn't help but observe that, once again, she was being dictated to, being told what she could do and where she could go. His fury made him ugly. She sat in one of the chairs and waited for his face to soften. They'd been together for so long, she'd forgotten to see him as a man, as a partner. Instead, he'd become someone else to have to take care of, another shirt to wash, another meal to cook. That wasn't fair to him. She reached her hand across the desk, but he didn't take it. I'm not going anywhere. It was a moment I got caught up. I love you. I love the children.
I've learned a lot about myself this past year. And now, with Harry getting sick, I understand that I don't need all that.
All what?
To work. To do anything other than take care of you and the children. When I was downtown, it was a different world in so many ways, and I was dazzled by it all.
Dazzled? What are you, a showgirl?
Contempt dripped from the word. No, that's not the right word. I'm not making much sense, I know. But it was a crush, let's say. Like schoolgirls get on each other. I love you. I love our family, what we've created. He took a quiet breath. I feel awful, Jack. I do. I'm sorry.
I should never have let you go back to school. That was a terrible idea.
I wanted to have something like you did, like your book.